Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. President Trump often speaks in glowing terms about his respect for the military. From VA reforms to pay raises, the president has done a lot for the troops and for veterans since taking office. But there has been controversy, too. Troops on the border, skipping the World War I memorial, and not yet visiting troops in combat. So what do veterans think of the commander-in-chief? This hour on Point, a veterans roundtable. Join us. Veterans, active duty personnel, is the president living up to his promises to you? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. With me first from Washington this hour, Leo Shane III, deputy editor at the Military Times. Leo covers Congress, Veterans Affairs, and the White House, and you can find a link to his recent story for today's VA. It's the best of times and the worst of times. That is at our website, onpointradio.org. Leo, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks for the invitation.
So President Trump often talks about veterans, about the military. Here he is just last week at a press conference after the midterm elections. Here he is.
I've done more for the vets than any president has done, certainly in many, many decades.
So there's the president. I'm reading from your piece, Leo, in the Military Times, saying the president just signed into law the largest VA budget ever, topping $200 billion. Congress has given him nearly every major piece of legislation on veterans policy that he has requested. Is the VA heading in a better direction under President Trump, Leo?
Look, the president has a lot to crow about with veterans policies. Unlike a lot of the other issues, veterans has been one where he's seen a lot of cooperation on Capitol Hill. He can point to a lot of successes. Whether or not that equates to he's the best president ever for veterans is a subjective term. But look, he promised that he was going to get a new accountability law to get rid of problematic workers at VA. They got that. He promised they were going to have a sweeping new law that would allow veterans to have more access to outside health care. They got that. There's a GI Bill overhaul in the last 2 years. You mentioned the size of the VA budget. So, you know, in a lot of respects, VA is on a very positive path.
When the president delivered the commencement address at the United States Naval Academy this May, he told the graduating folks there that there is, quote, nothing Americans can't do, despite those who want to, quote, denigrate America's incredible heritage, challenge America's sovereignty, and weaken America's pride.
We know the truth. We will speak the truth. And we will defend that truth. America is the greatest fighting force for peace, justice, and freedom in the history of the world. And in case you haven't noticed, we have become a lot stronger lately.
There is the president speaking to the graduating class at the U.S. Naval Academy. Leo Shane, talk to us a little bit about what veterans think about this president. You've been doing a lot of reporting the last couple of years. When you talk to veterans, what issues in particular come up?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of folks, when they think of the veterans community and the military community, they think of a pretty conservative monolith that they're going to go with Republicans all the time. And we've seen a much more nuanced reflection, especially with this president. We recently did a poll of active duty troops, and some of the findings there we know hold true for veterans as well, that saw the active duty troops are split in their opinion of Trump. About half have a favorable opinion, half have an unfavorable opinion. So, we're hearing a lot of the same things that you'll hear from folks in the public. The big difference is military and veterans issues. They are generally happy with how things have gone. Part of that is reflective of the budgets. We've seen the defense budget rise, just like the veterans budget. Part of that is his reliance on folks like Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, who is very popular among troops and veterans. So, you know, he gets high marks just for putting mm-hmm, him in place and, mm-hmm. and trusting him. But, you know, there are concerns, too. There's been a lot of controversy over just how much private care is being pushed out of VA. Is Trump talking about, you know, privatizing VA? What does that mean? How much there's a big ProPublica piece on some of the outside influences and how much of veteran policy is being conducted by folks who aren't official administration appointees. So, you know, what we've seen in general is that the same concerns that are in the public are there, maybe a little bit more favorable. The military and veterans community tends to lag more conservative, more Republican. So a little more positive.
So let me take you back to that poll that the Military Times conducted in collaboration, I believe, with the Institute of Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University. This was a voluntary, confidential online survey of U.S. service members. Interesting piece of that, more than 60% of military personnel polled said they believe the military is in better shape now than it was under President Obama, and nearly the same number have a favorable view of his handling of the military, Leo.
Yeah, that's right. And I think a lot of that goes back to that just the issue of the budgets. I mean, Obama, during his tenure, in part because of sequestration and forces in Congress, but in part because of his policies, looked to pull back on the growth of the military. He had talked about cutting back on personnel, cutting back on some missions. Trump, on the campaign trail and as president, really emphasized, no, we need to have a stronger military. We need to invest more money in that. And in the veterans military community, that goes far. Having more resources, seeing more flying hours, seeing more personnel added are all things that they want to see. One of the common themes that I hear a lot talking to veterans groups is they're as interested, if not more interested, in the active duty military issues than the veterans issues. They care about what's going on with VA. They care about their own benefits. But more than anything else, they want to make sure that the military, that their brothers and sisters in arms now have the resources they need, are ready for the next conflict and are being treated fairly. So from their perspective, they're seeing a lot more money being directed to DOD, seeing a lot more attention being paid to this idea of rebuilding the military or building up the military. So that engenders a lot of positive response.
Let me bring in our veterans for our roundtable now, Leo. Stick with me. Let me introduce via Skype from Hadley, New York, Suzanne Rancourt, retired corporal in the U.S. Marine Corps and Army. Suzanne, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. From Washington, Dan Caldwell, retired corporal in the U.S. Marine Corps. Dan, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me on.
And with us from Denver, Lisa Smith, retired senior airperson in the U.S. Air Force. Lisa, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hello, Jane.
So let me start with you, Lisa. You're a social worker. You work with veterans. What are you seeing? What are you hearing among the veterans community about this president, about this administration?
Yes, well, thanks for having me, and I do appreciate the ability to work with veterans after my military service. A lot of things that we do end up seeing is that there's a bit of a struggle in navigating the systems. While there might be some supports in place, it's sometimes hard for our veterans to get in, navigate, and figure out what's the right benefit, what's the right person to talk to, and how do I get that going and moving forward.
Hmm. Specifically this president, Suzanne, what are your thoughts on him, his work on behalf of veterans? We heard Leo talk about the many things he has done for this veterans community.
Well, what concerns me most with number 45 has to do with behaviors of decorum or the lack thereof, and how that supports a morale, how that supports a continued unit cohesion, if you will. And what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing is that it's quite divisive. And that's where I stand with that. I'm concerned about behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Dan, there's Suzanne talking about decorum or lack thereof and the impact on morale among our military folks. The events this past weekend somewhat shone a light on that. When the president was in France to commemorate the end of the First World War, he skipped that ceremony at the American Cemetery, where more than 2,000 U.S. troops are buried. He blamed the weather, took a lot of criticism for that. What are your thoughts generally and specifically to this last weekend and his behavior there?
I do think on some level these symbolic gestures do matter. I don't want to minimize them when I say what I'm about to say. But at the end of the day, what matters more is policy and operational outcomes. And as Leo, I think, accurately pointed out, the president has done a tremendous amount of work in passing legislation with the Congress. He did it in partnership with them. They deserve a lot of credit as well. And passing a large number of bills to fix a lot of systemic problems within the VA, bills that were stalled 6-7 years under President Obama and the previous Congresses. And he does deserve a lot of credit for that. Now, at the same time, though, you're going to have to implement a lot of these bills. And that's something I think that veterans in the military community need to be paying attention to, especially over the next year or so.
Lisa, what about that? You may not agree with the way the president behaves sometimes, some of his choices, but sure enough, operational outcomes are there. He's fixed a systemic problem within the VA. How do you see it, Lisa?
I think that he's pretty spot on the point that we need to look at policy and see what policies are being passed. The struggle I see is the implementation, right? When you have a revolving door of leaders within this administration, it's very hard to implement any new policies. When it comes to symbolic gestures, I think that really showcases who we are to the core, who our values are and what our values are. We lead by example, and by not showing up to events like this and commemoration ceremonies, it's not the example that we want to set. And it makes it harder for other nations and other organizations to want to work with us when we're shown as dismissive or not as respectful as maybe we should be.
Suzanne, President Trump often praises the military quite glowingly, actually. Do you feel valued when you hear him speak that way?
Again, I go back to the behaviors and whether or not those behaviors really are actions that demonstrate that respect. I mean, when we're talking about leadership qualities, anyone in the military knows that it's a top-down approach. And so when we have a leader that is not demonstrating a certain type of diplomacy that impacts our effectiveness, it does impact foreign policy. It does impact worldview. And whether you are a service person who is on deployment or whether you are a civilian, this has an effect on you.
We are discussing how veterans view the president's military policies and agenda this hour. We've got a great veterans roundtable. Lisa Smith, Dan Caldwell, Suzanne Rancourt, all veterans of our military, and Leo Shane, deputy editor at the Military Times. Listeners, we'd love to have you join us. Veterans, are you with the president? Are you grateful for his praise, for his actions, or not? I'm Jane Clayson. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking with a roundtable of veterans today about the president's relationship to the U.S. military. And you can join the conversation. Are you a military vet? Have things improved for you since President Trump took office? Do you feel safer knowing the president has surrounded himself with military generals? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. My guest today, Leo Shane III, deputy editor at the Military Times. Suzanne Rancourt, a veteran who served as a photojournalist with the U.S. Marine Corps in the late 1970s and as a chaplain's assistant and medic in the U.S. Army. She retired in 2008 as a corporal and is currently a poet and a writer. She's a recipient of the Native Writers Circle of the Americas Book Award. Also, Dan Caldwell is part of our panel today, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran who served in Iraq as an infantry team leader. He's currently the executive director for Concerned Veterans for America, a nonprofit veterans advocacy group. CVA does receive funding from the Koch brothers, we should say. And Lisa Smith, a U.S. Air Force veteran who protected nuclear weapons in Wyoming. She's currently a social worker and fellow at Team Rubicon, which is a veterans services organization that does disaster relief. Great panel. Thank you for starting us off there the way you have. I want to list off some of the things when it comes to the veterans and military that this president attributes to his accomplishments so far in office. He signed the most substantial veterans health care reform in a generation, signed the Veterans Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act, signed the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, which provides retroactive benefits to Americans veterans. By the way, that's already paid out about $115 million to veterans. And he's expanded the post-9/11 GI Bill to make it a lifetime benefit. Here is the president signing the VA Mission Act back in June, which increases private health care options for veterans and expands the caregiver program for pre-9/11 disabled vets. Here he is, the president, at the signing ceremony of the bill.
If the VA can't meet the needs of a veteran in a timely manner, that veteran will have the right to go right outside to a private doctor. So simple and yet so complex. This legislation also expands access to the caregiver program for seriously injured veterans. Because no matter where you served or when you fought, if you were in uniform, at some point, if you wore that uniform, then you deserve our absolute best. And that's what we're doing.
Lisa Smith, let me turn to you. Dan Caldwell, one of our veterans here, talked about operational outcomes, how they've improved under this president, he's fixed systemic problems within the VA. Isn't this a direct example of that?
Well, I think that the policies that he's pushing forward are, you know, forward moving and supporting of our veterans. The challenge is that when you can't get people to work with you, you know, people are leaving the jobs, people are not supporting the president's policies or what he's saying. It ends up becoming a challenge to actually get this into movement, into forward momentum. For example, you know, having a VA healthcare system that keeps saying they want to have electronic records and putting money towards, you know, streamlining that process and record keeping, yet there's no implementation, there's no follow-up, there's no actually seeing product happening. So I find that being very challenging with the president's directives, is that we don't have anyone to actually continue forward on these processes.
Leo Shane, is that true? No implementation of many of these directives?
Well, some of them remain to be seen. The Mission Act, as the president said, that really was a crown jewel of his veterans policy here, and that was just signed over the summer. We won't see the results of that until next spring. So the president's being a little loose and fast with saying what he signed. It's a overhaul of some of those outside care programs, but not necessarily anything that's implemented right now. And it should be noted, I mean, it's an impressive list of bills. As I said, they're all things the president has supported, but when you talk about appeals reform, when you talk about the post-9/11 GI Bill revamp, those are things that started under the Obama administration. Those are things that he would have signed if they were completed then. This issue of the outside care is something that has been discussed for a while, but the president arguably helped push that through. And then issues like accountability and revamping electronic health records, those are things that really came out of the White House and were pushed by them. So it's the guy in the office gets to claim credit for everything, even if it's partially his work.
Neil from our website wants the panel to weigh in on Trump's sending troops to the border with Mexico to stop the immigrants from applying for asylum, the chain of immigrants that's heading toward our borders. Suzanne, jump in here. What do you think about that? Some call it a political ploy. How do you see it?
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to side with the political ploy. I think that there's a better use of our troops. I'm concerned that we have an individual that is sending massive troops to an area that I'm not sure of those facts. I have to question the reliability of the facts that our commander-in-chief is basing these actions upon. And for that reason, I would want to not support that. I think there's a better use of our troops.
Dan Caldwell, how do you see it? Is there a better use of our troops?
Well, I think the purpose of any military is to secure its nation's territorial integrity and borders. That should be the primary mission of any military. That said, though, the United States military is not a law enforcement agency, and I think rightly so. It can't engage in law enforcement activities. And even though for really the last 20 years, the military, both the active duty and National Guard, have been supporting border control efforts, I can't look at this deployment and really think that it's an effective use of the military and that it will ultimately address what are real border security issues, particularly with asylum seekers, this caravan issue and things like that. And overall, these military units right now, their deployment cycles have been disrupted, their maintenance cycles have been disrupted, their training cycles have been disrupted. And even though I do believe in strong border security, there is ultimately a role for military units to play in securing a border. I can't look at this border deployment as being very effective.
Lisa, how do you see it?
Yes, I would echo that it's a waste of time and a waste of money. This is not an invasion, and I don't appreciate that narrative being spread across the channels. Having worked with refugees while deployed with Team Rubicon, you know, they're not dangerous. They're looking for a better way to live. You know, they're escaping a lot of hardship, and I think we should be welcoming them and not pushing them back in the way that we're approaching it.
I got a lot of calls here. Many veterans and others who want to join here. Let's go first to Harrison in Oklahoma City. Harrison, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the military for 17 years. I've served under the Bush administration, under the Obama administration, and now in the Trump administration. And I just find it, like, so appalling. And it's, like, so shocking because the brothers that I talk to that I serve with, they are in big-time support of the president. I think it's amazing. I think it's awesome that he is protecting our borders. There is a certain way that you have to come into this country, it's hard for me to understand how people don't understand that. Like, it's just like, you know, like if you do it the right way, it's okay. But if you don't do it the right way, it's okay that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen bonuses like go away when Obama was in office. Like we didn't have anything. I'm a recruiter. And now since the Trump administration is back in, we're getting all this type of funding. We're able to give kids $20,000 for enlisting to the service. We're getting new equipment. We're getting all this new stuff. And mm-hmm. It's just like, if there's one thing that President Trump has done right, it's how he's treating the veterans. And it's like he still can't even catch a break there. It's just like the people on the panel, they can't even get him a pat on the back for that. I think he's doing an amazing job.
Harrison, thank you. Suzanne, what do you say to your fellow service member there? You can't acknowledge the benefits are back, the pay raises are back. And beyond what Harrison said, you know, unemployment rates among veterans are at their lowest rate in nearly two decades under President Trump.
Well, I work still with a peer-to-peer mentoring program, and I have always resided in rural communities. So what the veterans' support and the assistance looks like in a rural community looks very different than in a larger populated area. So the challenges that I'm seeing now have to do with the implementation of these policies. So for me, it looks very different. And I would say that there's still a major fail as far as the implementation. So people can still be very gung-ho and support the president, but I'm seeing that that's waning. When services aren't met, when basic needs for veteran health care are not being met, when there's still a rigmarole to getting those services.
Harrison disagrees. Let's hear what Charles says from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
I am very much opposed to the current resident of 1600 Pennsylvania. I don't think he has any character. I think he has no integrity. I think he has no honor. I think that he serves the Koch brothers as trying to take dollars away from the VA Health Administration and put it into, that's deductive. One of the things that I do know, there's about 300,000 staff and medical professionals working in the VA Health Administration. That's a card.
Charles, we're losing your line, but I hear your thoughts. You think this president has zero respect for veterans. He did not serve. I want to throw this clip in here at this point. Here's a very famous clip, 2016 interview with George Stephanopoulos of ABC News, then candidate Donald Trump lashing out at the parents of Muslim Captain Humayun Khan, who criticized Trump during the Democratic National Convention. Here's that.
I saw him. He was, very emotional and probably looked like a nice guy to me. His wife, if you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She wasn't allowed to have anything to say. You tell me.
So, Dan Caldwell, jump in here. The president who says nobody's done better, nobody's been better for the military than he has, and yet, the mocking of Captain Khan, the mocking of the suffering of John McCain in a North Vietnamese prison. There's a dichotomy here. There's a conflict. Speak to that, Dan.
Well, I do think that whenever you're speaking about our military or our veterans, you need to honor somebody's service. You need to speak respectfully of it, even if you disagree with them on a political or policy level. However, I keep going back to the fact that at the end of the day, what ultimately matters most to veterans and to the military is, are they getting the care and benefits they've earned if you're a veteran and a military family or a military retiree as well too? Are our troops getting the best equipment and training that they need in a timely manner? And at the end of the day, on both accounts, I think we've made a lot of progress. Now, not everything's perfect. As we've talked about multiple times already throughout the show, a lot of these pieces of legislation that have been passed in the last couple of years, they still need to be implemented. If they're not properly implemented, then you'll have more problems at the VA. So there's still a lot of work to do in both the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think that's what's most important. The rhetoric at times, I can't defend it. It is disappointing. But what we're most focused on is the policy and operational outcomes.
Let's go back to the phones. Douglas in Lynn, Massachusetts. Hi, Douglas. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm just one of the kind of veterans that are on the fence where it's great post 9/11 GI Bill. It's kind of some to be forever, and if the VA is getting the funding that they need, but then the president has to say things that are disrespectful, like to John McCain, for example, saying, "I like the guys that don't get caught." So mm-hmm. that just discredits so many veterans that were POWs and had to endure horrific things that he never experienced and never will experience. So it's super frustrating when he shoots his mouth off like that. And then ultimately, I think no matter what, and it's going to be a challenge for any president, is bringing the suicide rate down to veterans, where it's, an average of 22 veterans a day. It's just awful. So when the president says really negative things about certain types of veterans, like POWs or something like that, that could push someone over the edge because they maybe already feel bad about their service because they were captured or something like that. And they could be really damaging statements to vets. So it's I'm one of the guys that's happy with some things, but super frustrated with others.
Douglas, I do appreciate your thoughtful comment and your call today. Douglas brings up this important point, the suicide rate among veterans. 20 veterans, roughly 20 veterans every day die by suicide. Last month, the president was asked if he would support and fund a more holistic approach to preventing veteran suicide. And here's a piece of what he said about that.
When people come back from war and combat and they see things that maybe a lot of the folks in this room have seen many times over, and you're strong and you can handle it, but a lot of people can't handle it. And they see horror stories. They see events that you couldn't see in a movie. Nobody would believe it. Now, we need a mental health help and medical. And it's one of the things that I think is least addressed. And it's one of the things that I hear, like your question, it's one of the things that I hear the most about when I go around and talk to the veterans.
The president went on to say that he is going to enact a robust, quote, a robust program to prevent veteran suicides. Lisa Smith, you're a social worker. A lot of people heard that and bristled, you know, when the president says a lot of veterans can't handle it. A lot of people can't handle it. They come back from combat. How did that strike you?
You know, frankly, hearing these type of words come from our leader really takes us a step back. The narrative of a veteran being weak, or any person for that matter being weak because they have some mental health struggles, is unacceptable. And I don't think he realizes that his words go a long way in just because you pass, you know, a new policy for supporting mental health services, but then you say, oh, maybe you're not weak or you're not strong enough and you need these services. That really takes people away from actually going forward and getting these services. And maybe they bottle it up. Maybe they don't talk about it as much. And that's when we start to see these mental health crises. So I think it goes with it's a twofold approach, right? You can have this policy and say, hey, we need more mental health services. We need more counselors. We need more people in the field. But when you start coupling that with the narrative of, hey, you know, you're not a strong person if you're receiving mental health services or you can't perform your job, you know, that does a disservice to us.
About 10 seconds before our break here, Suzanne, I want to get you in on this point. Your thoughts about the president's comments.
Survivor's guilt is real. Moral injury is real. And when you have a leader that is exhibiting behaviors that can be triggering, that is a major concern. And thus, I support Lisa's comments.
We are talking to a panel of veterans today, distinguished veterans who've served our country, and we're discussing how they view the commander-in-chief. You can join our conversation. Veterans and families, how do you think the president has handled ongoing problems at the VA? Do you think he uses veterans as a political pawn, as some critics allege? We'll return after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking to a group of veterans, a veterans panel today, about how they think the president is doing in his role as commander-in-chief. You can join our conversation. What advice do you want to give the president about military policy? What do you make of the president's strategy overseas? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Leo Shane is still with us, deputy editor at the Military Times. We appreciate him being here. And our veteran roundtable, Suzanne Rancourt, Army and Marine Corps veteran, Dan Caldwell, Marine Corps veteran, Lisa Smith, Air Force veteran. I want to get more calls in here. Manny from Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hi, Manny. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
I've been listening to the conversation, and I got to say that I do not approve with what the president, with what the president is doing. I really believe that he's using the military and has always used the military as a military prop. We get voter support. There is no way that someone that would actually support the military, really care about the military, insult Gold Star families, say that POWs weren't real heroes because they got caught. The disrespect has been so many. But passing legislation for the military gets you votes. Whether it passes or not, he signs a piece of paper, he looks good on paper. And being myself a 100% disabled combat veteran, with 22 years of service, what presidents say and do matter because it can create more conflicts. They were, while I was serving in Iraq and Afghanistan and everywhere else, a lot of the soldiers were very happy that they were getting new gear getting pay raises, getting all that stuff. But they were also being sent to more wars, useless wars, and dying. They weren't spending time with their families. Our budget was crashing. There are consequences that, unfortunately, if you're at the bottom rung of the military, you don't see. All you see is this guy's giving me more weapons. This guy's giving me more tools. This guy's giving me more money. But he's sending you to more wars.
Manny, I appreciate your call, and I hear what you're saying, and I'm so grateful for your service in the Army. 22 years, sir. Thank you for calling. Dan Caldwell, speak to Manny's point. Do you worry about the president's use of the military?
Well, in regards to using the military as a prop, I think that historically, just about every president at some point has wanted to be seen with the military, wanted to do all these events, you know, where you have troops standing behind you, where you have military equipment. That's something that throughout our history has always happening. I'm not going to say that it hasn't been inappropriate at times, but it's almost a tradition at this point, good, bad, or otherwise, that's the reality. But there's one thing I do want to address that Manny brought up, and that's, you know, the use of our military abroad and the use of our military in a combat situation. And I think that the president is actually at times shown good instincts on this, believing that we should be more restrained in our use of military force abroad. We should be more careful about getting involved in interventions overseas and overthrowing governments and attempting to create democracy in the Middle East. He, in many ways, I think, articulated a more restrained vision for foreign policy during the campaign. I don't think at times he's acted on that as president. I think that's an area where he actually needs to trust his instincts more. But we do need to be more judicious in the use of military force abroad. It doesn't mean we become isolationists or pacifists, but we should only be using our troops in combat as a last resort and if there's clear American interests at stake.
Dan, thank you. Lisa Smith, do you agree with your fellow veteran there that the president has shown good instincts? He's more careful about the use of military and interventions overseas? How do you see it?
I think he's a little more hesitant, given there's a high cost value if you start deploying veterans or military personnel to various conflicts. But I also think that it's important for us to set a good example in trying to ensure that people are being ethical, people are treating each other well in other nations. You know, we want to set that example that, you know, we don't stand for this type of oppression and this type of genocide in many of our other nations.
Suzanne Rancourt, this president has yet to visit U.S. troops in a combat zone overseas, something his four most recent predecessors all did by this point in their presidency. Mr. Trump has said it's not overly necessary, that he is, quote, very busy with everything that's happening here. As a veteran, how do you see that? Do you want to see the president visiting the troops overseas? How do you view it?
Well, based on the his ability to use words that trigger and incite, I'm not sure if it would be the most morale-boosting visit. So in some way, it might be better that he not go, quite frankly. You know, when you have someone who is disrespectful of certain basic shall we say, rituals pertaining to our warriors, and no, I come from a Native American perspective on this, if he's not able to control his behavior, I think maybe he's better off staying stateside.
Let me bring Sarah into the conversation from Maine. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program.
Coming up soon.
Hi, you're on the air, Sarah. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. I've heard on at least two different news programs, it may have been Rachel Maddow's, that the president is not really taking care of our veterans, that veterans who've been given the GI Bill and promised housing have not received payments for their housing and are being evicted and having to leave the programs that they're in, you know, registered for. And I wonder what you have to say about that?
Sarah, thank you. Good question. Leo, Shane, jump back in here. Does this go back to the implementation piece that our panelists have been talking about?
Yeah, so this does tie to that post-9/11 GI Bill overhaul that we saw two summers ago. There's been quite a few problems with just how the money's being paid out this semester. I haven't heard reports of folks who are actually have been evicted or have been forced out of college at this point, but it's something that we've been tracking for a while. It's interesting because this is one of those issues where, you know, if folks wanted to criticize Trump, they could criticize that the VA hasn't been on the ball. But a lot of what we hear from veterans and from military folks is a little bit of fatalism around VA, that this is, frankly, you know, VA has had a lot of issues with handling benefits, with making large changes. So, you know, both among supporters and among some of his critics, we've heard, you know, this is just VA, and this is part of the culture he has to clean up. Certainly there are some critics of Trump who say, look, this is the kind of thing, if you really are promising to clean up VA, you have to prevent this from happening. But, you know, it's a mixed bag in terms of who's to shoulder the blame here for that mistake.
So a couple of our listeners have asked this very question that you bring up. Ari in Vermont, Dennis tweets this question as well. What about the benefits that veterans have not received just in the last few months? What do you know about that, Leo?
And I would have to get specifics. There's all, you know, it's a very complicated veterans benefit system. Mm-hmm. We haven't heard anything about wide scale delays on most of the benefits, but there's been a lot of fights over things like Agent Orange exposure, who should be eligible, some of the wait times on processing these benefits. Again, some of these are long standing problems, but they're things that Trump has said, you know, he has fixed or he will fix and has promised these things. You know, I think one of the themes that we've heard running throughout the conversation here today is, you know, actual policy versus Trump's rhetoric. And as I said in the opening, there's a lot of policy that he can point to and be proud of and claim success legitimately. There's also a lot of things the president has said that have just been flat out wrong and flat out inaccurate when it comes to things like pay raises and veterans unemployment. He often exaggerates what the accomplishment is and thereby, you know, undercuts some of his own success.
Let's get Chris in here from Denver, Colorado. Hi, Chris. Glad you called. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hi. I think the big thing a lot of people kind of get focused on is, you know, the access to the VA and those programs. But, you know, with the appointment of Ryan Zinke, fellow veteran also, you know, Ryan Zinke, Secretary Zinke, has done a lot to undercut those gains as Secretary of Interior. I think Lisa is from Team Rubicon can attest through some of the options as hunts for vets and veterans expeditions that are not, you know, VA programs per se, but they are programs that veterans have access to. And when we lose access to the outdoors through the Park Service, BLM access, and U.S. Forest Service, mm-hmm. that is a huge loss. And it's very, dare I say, infuriating to see a fellow veteran, Zinke, do that as, you know, Trump's yes man. Because, you know, it's not just about going into the VA and getting another dose of pills or, you know, it's about getting out to the outdoors and kind of getting your mind straight. As a flight nurse, I've seen a lot, and I did 6 deployments. Mm. So I'm trying to wash myself of that in the outdoors. Mm. And that's
a lot of layers here. Chris, I do appreciate your call, and it's a good point. Thank you very much. Let's get Migdad in here from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Hi, Migdad. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
And I'll just make it very short for you guys. My biggest problem as a veteran with the current administration is basically all the division and rhetoric that comes out of everything that comes out. I personally don't believe too much that into his policies when it comes to the veterans. I don't think he knows exactly what he's going to be doing on that part, but he might have some decent staff in behind that. Hopefully he would allow them to help him on that part. Mm-hmm. However, as a representative of the president, you know, I am having fights with my own guys who I deployed with, and when it comes to how much they support it, because we are being, as we are, we're not supposed to be taking sides when it comes to that part. That's how we've been trained on.
So it's a part of your conversations, at least with your friends and former colleagues. Migdad, thank you very much. Migdad brings up a good point about the people that the president has surrounded himself with, the staff of this president. Suzanne Rancourt, this president has surrounded himself with military men. Do you trust the people the president has put in charge? Defense Secretary James Mattis, for example.
Well, I have a good response, but, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine. So, I mean, I have a very good response, and I'm really quite grateful that General Mattis is on that team. And that's enough said on that area.
Lisa, is that enough for you? Do you trust the people the president has put in charge, many of them military folks?
One of the things that I do appreciate in having such reputable people on the cabinet is that Trump seems to value a lot of the military personnel that he surrounds himself with, which makes me feel a little bit more comfortable about what people are saying to him. You know, I do like General Mattis. I think he could do a little more to support and advocate on LGBTQ issues within the military. I really appreciate General Dunford. He's a hardworking, respectable, level-headed guy. So, you know, some of these people I really do respect and value.
And Dan, your thoughts?
I share the other panelists' views of a lot of the appointments that have been made. I think in particular General Mattis is going to be a very consequential Secretary of Defense. Something that the administration hasn't gotten a lot of attention for, and I think credit, is some of the process and business reforms that they've attempted to implement in the Department of Defense to eliminate waste. The Defense Department is undergoing its first audit ever. In fact, there should be a report released on this later this week. General Mattis has talked a lot about the need to honor the taxpayers' dollars and intent to make sure they're being spent wisely. That's an area where we're hopefully going to see some more progress and already have seen some good things happen as well.
That's a consequential effort, is it not, Leo Shane, the first audit ever there?
No, absolutely. And it plays into Trump's larger larger themes of reforming government, make government work better. If we're going to ask for a bigger defense budget, let's make sure that it's spent properly. So we'll see what that comes to when we get into next year's budget cycle. The president has already said he expects a 5% cut from all federal agencies. DOD may be exempt from that, but is still expecting to see some cut. When it comes to veterans issues, you know, that's a $10 billion cut out the window. We got a chance to ask VA Secretary Robert Wilkie about that a few days ago, and he said, look, I'm preparing for it. I'm looking at possible cuts to the VA budget, but I also expect that Congress is going to give me more money than we had this year. You know, it's tough to say no to veterans in the end, so we'll see how that plays out.
In our last couple of minutes here, let me throw a question out to the roundtable for a quick answer. What do you want to see from this president moving forward that you're not seeing? Or what do you like that you would like to see more of? Lisa Smith, you first.
Mental health, transitional support, and stronger implementation policies on what he recently passed. Hmm.
Suzanne Rancourt, what would you like to see?
I need to see behaviors and words that are more congruent. That's what I need to see. And again, in rural America, rural communities, I need to see that implementation and people being helped in these rural communities, these veterans. So,
Dan Caldwell, what would you like to see more of from this president?
I'd like to see him continue to advocate for more choice in veterans' health care and more accountability within the VA, continue the progress and momentum from his first 2 years, ensure the VA Mission Act is properly implemented, because if it's not, it's going to create a disaster within the VA healthcare system and undermine a lot of the good work he's done already.
Leo Shane, what is on the horizon for this administration, for this president, as it relates to veterans?
Yeah, the next big thing is, as you heard over the course of the hour here, is going to be implementation, and particularly this Mission Act. How does VA decide it's going to allow veterans to go more into the private sector to get their health care? This is, again, a core promise of the president, something he's pushed towards. Now we get into the nitty-gritty of, are we talking about veterans going down the street to CVS to get a flu shot, which I think is something a lot of people be supportive of? Or are we talking about veterans who are going to have to go to a doctor who may not know their background for prosthetic care, which would be very much more complicated?
Leo Shane III, Deputy Editor at the Military Times. Leo, thanks for leading us through this conversation and for your excellent reporting on the matter. Thank you very much, Leo.
Thank you.
Lisa Smith, U.S. Air Force Veteran Fellow at the Team Rubicon. Lisa, great pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Dan Caldwell, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, executive director at the nonprofit Veterans Advocacy Group, Concerned Veterans for America. Dan, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
And Suzanne Rancourt, veteran of the U.S. Army and Marine Corps. She's also a poet, a nonfiction writer. Suzanne, thank you very much for your service and your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate it. As the wife of a veteran, I appreciate all of your service. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.